Okay, thank you, Greg. I'd first like to thank the organizers for the invitation and the wonderful workshop here. So I'm going to talk about today investigations of rapidly rotating, stably stratified, and non-hydrostatic flows. So rapid rotation is going to be rotationally constrained flows. So I'll be talking about flows where the primary balance in the momentum equation is geostrophic between the Coriolis force and the pressure gradient. And non-hydrostatic flows, so we're looking at motions, weakly stratified fluid layers. I'd like to acknowledge David Neves. This work, which has been published in JFM, was part of his PhD thesis. David is now in Hui, the Woto Oceanographic Institute, working with Mike Spall. And I am Keith Julian. So I'll get to explain some of these things as the talk proceeds. So as by way of contrast, I'd like to first just motivate and discuss the systems that are strongly rotating, or so rotationally constrained, but and strongly stratified. And there are many such flows in many such geophysical flows, and these are primarily characterized by a low Rossby number, as given some characteristic velocity field, length scale. The rotation time is much smaller than the eddy advection time. And as I mentioned in the first slide, this is the primary balance in the momentum equation will be geostrophy, pressure gradient force, and the Coriolis force. So this is typically defined, characterized by this non-dimensional parameter, the Rossby number, and strong, stable stratification, as defined again by the Froude number. So if we have a stably stratified number layer with a buoyancy frequency, again, the time scale for gravity waves is much smaller than for the advective time scale. And typically in these geophysical flows, the Reynolds number is large, so we're looking at turbulent, we're interested in the turbulent flows. So there's a bit of the classic case for this will be in the world's oceans, so where typically the distinguished limits or for these parameters, Froude number and the Rossby number is this way. And you can see this is really what one sees here in these parameter regimes of low Froude number and strong stable stratification, is that the ocean is full of eddy dynamics on the eddy turnover time scale, which is much smaller than which is much longer than the rotational time scale and the gravity wave time scale here. So this is actually from NASA. This is using synthesized data, satellite data, and in situ data from the oceans to drive a GCM model to sort of show you the ocean, the eddy dynamics in the ocean. So you can see it's just full of eddies that are large. Mesoscale eddies, so they're larger than the deformation radius where potential energy is being converted to kinetic energy, and the ocean is just rife with these motions. And this is sort of the classical situation of large-scale geophysical flows that are stably stratified. If you actually look at data cross sections of the ocean, you can see that this balance or this characterization or ordering is pretty much obeyed across most of the ocean by latitude and by depth. So if you try to understand this, this balance or this separation in timescales, one can do this by looking at the Navier-Stokes equations or the Boussinesq equations in an infinite domain with a constant stratification and rotation rate, and you can do a normal mode analysis of the oceans and look at the sort of the wave and eddy dynamics. So eddies in this case, the linear dynamics break up into zero frequency rays representing the eddies, and the waves are there are two components of the waves, and you can see the response due to gravity waves and the response due to inertial waves in this dispersion relation. For all this, theta is actually the angle of phase propagation to the vertical. So theta gives an angle to the vertical when it tells you the propagation of the phase fronts here. And in this limit of low Rossby number and low Froude number, one can see that this frequency is going to be much greater than the eddy turnover. Think about this as an order one timescale. This frequency is going to be much greater than the eddy advective timescale. So there's a large separation between the eddy dynamics and the wave dynamics in the flow. And this is sort of a situation where one will think of trying to filter the fast dynamics. And of course, this was done many years ago by Jules Charney, where using this wave separation, we can try and focus on just the eddy dynamics. And he did this and came up with a quasi-geostrophic equation. And in this case, using geostrophic balance here, it turns out the pressure is reduced from being a quadratic quantity on velocity to a linear quantity, and it's actually the stream function for horizontal motions. And you can also show that the buoyancy in the flow is related to this. So this is a reduction where all the flow is just reduced to dependence on one variable. And if you crank through the equations and do the reductions, you end up with a reduced equation for, which is the quasi-geostrophic equations, which is just evolution of the potential vorticity. So you've got the kinetic energy here, defined by the Laplacian of this pressure stream function, and you also have a contribution due to buoyancy effects in there. So if you force, typically this is a sort of idealized setting to looking at the slow eddy dynamics where one filters the fast dynamics, just same thing that you would do in the Boussinesq equation when you soundproof them and you take the U equals zero. This is the strategy for filtering waves in this domain. So this is a reduced equation for idealized studies of what we just saw in the ocean. And there's some classic things we know about this situation of strong stratification and rapid rotation. If you force at a given scale, we know it has similarities to two-dimensional turbulent dynamics, where for scales longer than the forcing scale, there's an inverse cascade, five-thirds cascade, going to the large scale. So this is a simulation done by colleague Jeff Weiss and Jim McWilliams, Gerard Diablet many years ago, where this is a rundown experiment where they seeded the potential vorticity field at small wave numbers, and then let this thing. Mike
in Wisconsin. Where's the nonlinearity?
It's embedded in this. This is the material advection of this. So this is d by dt, u dot grad. Okay, so the nonlinearity is embedded in the advective evolution of this. And yeah, so it's just the material, horizontal material advection of this PV term. Okay. And so a classic 2D, there's actually, you can show without forcing and dissipation, there are two conserved quantities in this equation, energy and entropy, and one can get the classic 2D setting where you have an inverse cascade of this of energy and a direct downward cascade of an entropy at scales larger than the forcing scale. So it's a reduced equation. Many things are known about it when it's compared with the DNS. So MBID and MIDA have looked at the full DNS and looked at the wave separation between the eddy dynamics and the wave dynamics, and show there's no coupling of the wave field to the eddy field. So in some sense, the eddy field is what you see in the eddy field is what you're going to see on the so-called slow manifold. There's a paper by Taman and others that show that this manifold is actually an attracting manifold, and it's been evidenced in this setting. So I should say this is like a 3D, this is a triply periodic box, and this is sort of a standard scenario that people have done some DNS experiments for the DNS and had confirmed some of the dynamics seen in QG. So there's work by Fabian and Leslie Smith, and recent work by Anique Bouquet and her group, and Beth Wingate and Jared Whitehead that have looked at this and looked at the energy transport properties in this particular equation. But this is not the only case. I mean, even though this is sort of a common case in the ocean, there are other situations in geophysics where rotation, Rossby number is still small, okay, but stratification is weak, okay? So In this case, that's mean gravity waves. The gravity waves now, or the inertial gravity waves, are now going to be on the same time scale as the eddy dynamics of the flow. There's some situations in the ocean, open ocean deep convection, where in the high latitude oceans you can get convective gyres that become preconditioned, and they have weak density stratification, and they can have a massive cooling event and lead to rapid mixing, which is rotation convection. And this is the situation where the Froude number is going to be order one. And a less study case is actually when you actually look at this plot, where I said that the sort of the classical QG picture of Charnay's is pretty much all over the ocean. If you go to the abyssal oceans, actually, it can show that the stratification or the buoyancy frequency is actually going to zero there. Okay, so it's going to be weak stratification, and so this is a case where they can be rotationally constrained dynamics, but with weak stratification, and there's no separation here between the eddy dynamics and the waves. And this, you know, so this is not a case that has been studied very much, and this is sort of the focus of what we want to look at. We've been looking at over the past few years. So just to show again, if we go back to this dispersion relation, just to understand the lack of separation, if it's so called. So think about this as an order one. This is the vortical mode in the governing equations. But if you look at the eddy thing here, so Froude number order one. For all wave propagation angles, this thing's going to be an order one number. Okay, Rossby number small here, so you would think that this thing will still band this thing to be pretty high, well separated. But you can find out, okay, for waves, okay, if you look at this K perp, the horizontal component of the wave vector, KZ, the vertical component of the wave vector, if it gets to be this order, so these are waves that are sort of horizontally propagating phase fronts. One can see that, you know, so this term becomes order Rossby squared, okay, and this can be order one, okay. So there are these sort of columnar wave features that are slowly propagating, and there's no separation between between the eddy time scale and the wave inertial gravity wave. So what happens here? Okay, so is this a place where one can seek reduction to try and understand what's going on in the flow? And it's numerically hard. If you try to get down to low Rossby number flows with a full DNS, basically you're trying to track these fast inertial waves, they need to be resolved. So this is to explore this is a pretty expensive proposition. So as Steve puts it, if there's reduced equations about, one should try use them. Okay, so this, I just said that. So here's the setup. I'm gonna just say before reducing these equations, we're going to look at the Boussinesq equation, so momentum equation, buoyancy equation. Think about this as your heat equation, and incompressibility imposed. We're going to have a constant rotation, and here's a this is an imposed ambient stratification with some frequency. It can be general. It can be a general profile, but here we're just going to take it to be constant, so that S is going to be one in the studies we looked at. Just talked about a lot of these. Parameters, you know, these are the control parameters of the problem. Prandtl number is a ratio of viscosity to thermal diffusion. For ocean, this will be, for water, this will be 7. Okay, so if we're going to look at that. The study is not what we've undertaken is an idealized study. Again, we're looking at this for the first time. So we're thinking about a triply periodic box, okay, with a constant stratification going through the box. And the idea is within this setting is to vary the stratification from weak to strong. So Froude number is order one. Within that distinguished limit, we can vary the stratification from being weak, from weak to strong. And I highlight here again, Rossby number is small, so the dominant balance is this thing, pressure gradient and the Coriolis force. Being the primary balance, which is geostrophy. If you're doing in the stable stratification, stable stratified region for this triply periodic flow, there's no natural instability of the flow, so we actually have to sort of do a standard thing where we have to inject energy at a given scale, L, okay, and that's our control parameter in terms of forcing how we, one of the control parameters, how we force dynamics. This naturally leads to a characteristic scale for velocity and time scale, which we can control, have a priori measures of these non-dimensional parameters. Yeah. So it's a pretty full parameter space. When you're actually looking at this problem, you can there are some internal scales of the problem that we need to sort out and be aware of. Of course, all dependent on these non-dimensional parameters. So the Kolmogorov scale for where eddies are dissipated. There's the deformation radius, which is really the scale at which potential energy is converted to kinetic by baroclinic instability in the flow. For us, we'll see that is a drive in what we call a depth-independent barotropic mode. There's a Zeeman scale. This is the scale a bit above which eddies are deformed and know that the thing is the flow is rotating. So eddies are deformed by rotation. Below this scale, it's like you can ignore the Coriolis term. And the Osmidov scale, which is the same thing for gravity waves, for stratification. So there's a large number of parameters to be aware of when we're doing our simulation studies. But some of the things that we do, we take that the Zeeman scale to be much smaller than the Kolmogorov scale. So that's saying all dynamics are going to feel rotation in some way or be deformed by the Coriolis force all the way down to the Kolmogorov scale. So, and this, if you do this, this actually puts an upper bound for the Rossby number, depending on the Reynolds number, which is one of our control parameters, or vice versa. If one picks the Rossby number, there's an upper bound on the Reynolds number of the flow. By design, if we have a forcing scale, and we want, I told you that the waves of interest are the ones that are columnar, high. These are the ones that are traveling at an order one and are interacting with the eddies. We have to choose an aspect ratio of our flow that is pretty large. So this is the parameter space that we wish to explore. Essentially, we control the driving Reynolds number, where we inject energy, and the Froude number, the order one Froude number, where we can vary from being strongly stratified to the case of weakly stratified or pure rotation. The ordering of these scales leads to some division of this parameter space. For instance, down here, where we can see that the deformation radius is greater than the forcing scale, which is one non-dimensionally here, and here it reverses, and we can see some ideas of that the Osmodov scale where in the pure rotation becomes pretty large. So we can get to situations where we don't expect the flow to feel stratification. So this is sort of the parameter space that we wish to explore. And again, if you want to do this with the full DNS, it is particularly challenging in terms of trying to resolve all these scales and track fast inertia waves. So some time ago, we have derived what we call a reduced model, PDE model, for investigating such flows where the geostrophic balance is the dominant balance, but the flow is non-hydrostatic. This was done in a paper with Edgar Knobloch and a follow-up paper with the postdoc then Mike Sprague. Just to give a brief, no time to sort of go into the details of the derivation, but just to give a brief summary of the equations, the expansion parameter is going to be the Rossby number. So all fluid variables are expanded in terms of the Rossby number. The aspect ratio is going to be tall. That's imposed in the model. So we're looking at columnar motions. If you dial these things into the governing equations, we get a leading order geostrophic balance for horizontally incompressible flow. This can be solved in terms of the pressure becomes a stream function, and we have for horizontal motions, and there's vertical velocity as well. This is a leading order balance. If you do the asymptotics, you get the similar thing at every higher order as these indices go up in order. You have a right-hand side, using the standard techniques of PDEs, you want to ensure as you go up the forcing terms that appear on the right-hand side, okay, don't lie in the null space of the geostrophic operator. If you do that, at the next level, you'll get these equations. Okay, so vorticity equation has some classic signs of classical, has some signs of classical QG, where we have the horizontal advection. So this Jacobian is the horizontal advection of of this vertical vorticity. The only place that we see Coriolis force is through planetary stretching. So this is the planetary stretching term here. Typically, this is also here in QG. QG, this is where you get pancake-like motions. In that case, the vertical motions are weak, the gradients are strong. Okay, in this case, it's the opposite way around. Okay, we find for non-hydrostatic motions, vertical motions are strong, but gradients are weak due to the columnar aspect of the flow here. So what we have, because vertical motions are weak, rather than having just a strict non-hydrostatic balance, we get a prognostic equation for the vertical velocity. There's a buoyancy force in that one can drive the flow with here. And this is described by the dynamics of buoyancy fluctuations, which again are horizontally evecting. And we have vertical evection of a mean buoyancy gradient, which includes the ambient term and any feedback due to eddy flux, convective eddy fluxes in the flow. As I said, if we do this for the stably stratified case, there's no intrinsic instability in the flow, so we force this. Okay. Now the primary motivation here is to see the effect of waves, of these slow waves. Okay. So there are many ways of forcing this. We choose just to force the vertical momentum equation, and but in so doing, we're only forcing waves. Okay. So any dynamics you see that occur is a consequence of the wave forcing. Okay. We want to see how that leaks and maybe force the eddy dynamics of the flow. With this stretching, you get the dispersion relation where this is an order one. With a rescaling, this is just an order one dispersion relation. So you can see the effect of gravity waves here and the inertial wave term. So these are the equations that we solve. Time is moving along. Won't say this is sort of numerical technique. You know, this forcing term is just a stochastic forcing term at a given scale. The code is a triply periodic code where it's solved where the all linear terms are treated implicitly, and it's a couple solve, okay, and the nonlinear advection terms are the terms that are treated explicitly in the model. So let's talk for the remaining. Let's just talk about some of the dynamics that we see when we go ahead and solve this model. So in this space, so everywhere we had a cross is a place where we've conducted a numerical experiment, and by and large we see that it's some things are similar to QG, that as we force the flow at a given scale we see an upscale energy transport that organizes into a barotropic dipole. So this is you see these two columns here in the vorticity field is just two depth independent barotropic vortices. These grow to the box scale and form a dipole. If you make the box larger, the scale grows as well. And outside of this, we actually see some turbulent fluid motions. There were some surprises here, actually. So I should say that the original equations, these reduced equations that we have, actually contain the QG equations within them. So if I take the Froude number to be small, so stratification becomes strong, we recover the QG equation. So we were expecting to see that, but one of the surprises we saw is what happens to the turbulence outside of the barotropic vortices, actually. In this case, we actually saw layering. Okay, we don't understand this, basically, but the flow organized itself into layers, okay, and these are turbulent layers, basically, where we have sort of enhanced kinetic energy due to the eddy dynamics going on within the layers. And this happened, you know, going towards the QG limit, basically. So happens at high enough Reynolds number. If the Reynolds number is too small, then no, so viscosity can wipe these out. But for as far as going to Reynolds numbers on the order of 1,000, we always saw these layers in this, what we call the so-called QG limit. So don't understand that so much, but did I miss this slide? I've missed the slide. I'm going backwards, sorry. Here we go. And if you go up to the, as you increase the Froude number, so it's largely just strong stratified, unstratified flows, you see these layers go away, and outside of these barotropic dipoles, the layer is just filled with the with turbulent eddy, baryonic eddy dynamics in there. And you can see these in all the fields. You know, we have, just to make a mention, you know, we have an a priori estimate of Rossby number, Reynolds number and stuff, but the flow does what it does. Basically, it goes to large scale, so after the fact, we can measure what the effective Reynolds number of the flow is, what the effective through number of the flow is, and what we see here by doing this is given here. We always see, because you have longer length scales and bigger velocities due to the barotropic motions, the Reynolds number of the final Reynolds number of the state is much larger than what we've put in, okay. And the through number is actually smaller. it goes to stronger stratification due to the length scales, the length scale. Become this length scale here, as defined by the centroid here. But it never flips, you know, in the sense that, you know, weak stratification remains the weak stratified limit, and the strong stratification remains in the strong stratified limit. Okay, so let's try and characterize what we know about layering. 5 minutes left. So we know that in the model, this is not in the QG, in the classical QG, the dynamics can never feed back and affect the background stratification. This is not the case in non-hydrostatic flows. In the mean equation, we have an eddy flux, a buoyancy flux that can feed back and adjust, create a mean and adjust and either accentuate or degradate the background stratification. So this is what happens when we see this. So this is in the varying in the weak through number limit, and you can see this is evidence. This is the buoyancy, the stratification. So typically it should just be a straight line, okay, going like z or one should be its gradient. What you see is, it's really hard to see at small through numbers. You do see this layering in this. Larger through numbers, you can see this mixed layer with a stronger gradient in the interior. Is better observed in the buoyancy gradient, where you can see these dips from one, where the stratification is being weakened due to the turbulent dynamics within the layer.
Lorette. Indeed, on the left. Yeah. Small question. Lorette Tuckerman, ESPCI. Indeed, on the left, it seems non-monotonic.
Yeah, so only the gradient of the buoyancy comes in the equation. So if you're worried about spectral accuracy, that's all.
No, I'm not worried about it. Yeah. I see the yellow. The yellow is an intermediate value of Froude number.
Yes.
And yet the one does not seems to be with very small values, and the intermediate value seems to be. Is there miss? Am I wrong? Did I miss something? Maybe.
It's a big jump, actually. I don't know. Let me hold on.
Okay.
I have to hold on to that. So, that is the case on the right. So when we go to the the weak stratification limit, it seems to snap back where the thank you. Okay, so that's the. If you actually try to measure these layers, okay, well, we know the layers are due to enhanced vortex stretching. One can measure these by looking at the vorticity RMS. Basically, we see this typical double hump signal in each of the layers. The layer can be actually identified by the minima, and its width can be identified by its maxima. And we see, as the Froude number decays, the layers get the Froude number gets smaller, and the layers do get smaller indeed. We don't know much here about the layers, but if you want to say, we know if we try to compare it with other situations where we see layering in purely stably stratified flow, where we see layering, that's really due to shear turbulence, Kelvin Homotz instability that mixes a layer, that can homogenize a layer like we see. That's not happening here, okay? In the case of double diffusive system, where we can see layering, it's the opposite way. So one builds steep steep gradients in the layer, not weaker gradients in the layer. So this is something that we have to sort of, it's early, and we're trying to do some more investigations to sort of get an understanding of what's going on there. Just briefly, a few minutes, if we look at the spectra of the flow, we see some classic signs. So we can break down the layer, the dynamics of the horizontal kinetic energy into barotropic mode, the depth-independent mode, and baroclinic fluctuations. The barotropic mode essentially satisfies a 2D vorticity equation. So without forcing and dissipation, this has the control. These are these conserved quantities, energy, pseudo-energy, and pseudo-entropy that will lead to the inverse cascade. And the way of forcing this in the 3D is by the turbulence. So the turbulence in the layer through vortex stretching provides a forcing term that drives barotropic dynamics, and this generates an inverse cascade. And we see classic signs of what happens in the QG upscale downscale transport of entropy of minus a third in either case, and it's upscale transport of should be 5/3, but the we know that the size of the eddies can actually distort the spectrum. And in the baroclinic kinetic energy, we put these guided minus 5/3 curves to show sort of like the downscale energy of that. There's not much of a range there, but you know, we put that for guidance. No time left. So I'm going to just mention two things. We do see that at low enough Reynolds number, the barotropic kinetic energy does dominate. It's the biggest flow component to the energetics of the flow, and it does saturate. Okay, saturation is actually given by, in these limits, there's the forward cascade of, you look at the transfer maps of the nonlinear barotropic interactions, the transfer maps has a local Dirac cascade that is enough to balance the inverse cascade, okay, bring it into balance and saturate the flow. This does not happen for classical QG where the Reynolds number is by design is quite large. This is not strong enough to arrest the inverse cascade, which keeps on growing. But we do see this for small enough Reynolds number in this case. So I will go over, no time for that. That sort of describes the energetics of the flow. I'll just put my conclusions up, but I'm a few minutes over. I apologize. Thank you.
So we have time for questions.
Mike Schatz, Georgia Tech. Is there a length scale selection in the separation of the layers? Is that also a box size?
There is one based on the Froude number. So as the Froude number becomes larger, the layers are getting wider. Okay. We haven't done, admittedly, we haven't done an analysis to sort of quantify that right now, but the answer is yes.
Thanks.
Steve Tobias, University of Leeds. Very interesting, Keith. Can you just say again in what way the layering is different from double diffusive layering? I missed that.
So let's go back. Well, in double diffusive salt finger layers, you know, these things are steepest. This, you know, the gradients are being steepened in the layers, okay. And then you have outside is where you get the well mixed zone. It's the opposite here, okay.
And do you have mean flows in those?
No.
Outside, you don't.
No, not in this. It's all due to. It seems to be due to the wave eddy. Yeah, wave eddy there.
Colin Caulfield, Cambridge. Obviously, the layers are catnip to me. So, the trying to follow up what Lorette was saying, what is going on at the 0.5 Froude number? 0.05, you have lots of small layers.
Yeah.
And yet you still have a layering process at 0.5.
0.5.
But not, then it switches off at 1.
It switches off at 1.
So is the 0.5 the same layering process as the 0.05 and 0.1 cases, do you hypothesize, or is it yet a different layering process?
I would hypothesize it is right now, okay? But again,
are these precisely the set of simulations done?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So why would you guess it switches off between 0.55 and 1 then?
Well, I think going on the other side, the pure rotation case, we don't see, you know, we just don't see layering, and check on that. But one thing I may see, I think maybe happen we haven't done, is that the whole thing is just, it's not a layer, but the whole layer is being mixed and weakened at a smaller buoyancy frequency.
Can I just quickly ask?
Yes.
In your talk, I got the impression you thought that might be a typo. Not those monotonic behavior.
Yeah, I do. Actually, so.
Does that relate to your?
I actually think what happens. I mean, this is actually in the paper. I think that the whole thing in what we should have here is that in the whole thing where we do the pure rotation case, there's mixing all over. So I think this thing should weaken without any layers.
Okay. So.
I'm still a little bit confused. Do you mean that the through number 1 and 0.55 should be commuted?
No.
So you stand by.
No, there's weakening. So the layer is here, okay, in the 0.5, like in this case. Oh, you think it should be flipped the other way?
No, I'm just asking you, what were you confident with?
So this is where the layer is here, okay? So actually this should be commuted, actually. I think we've made a mistake here. This should be negative, so it's a weakening of the buoyancy gradient. No, okay. I'll have to get back to you on that one, actually. That one's a mistake.
Rodolfo Stila, University of Harvard. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering, could you elaborate a bit more on the noise you're using to force?
Yeah, so it's just, if I go back to... Let me go back to that slide. It's just stochastic forcing at a given wave at a given band of wave numbers. Okay, so yeah. So we pick this non-dimensional length scale. So it's actually we're forcing. This is a box, typically 10 by 10 by 1. We're forcing at the non-dimensional length scale is 1. So we just pick a random. On the circle of 1, okay, and random forcing. So it's smooth in space, okay, but stochastic in time. So every time step, we're just stochastically forcing with this type of forcing. And it's done, as I said, it's done solely in the vertical momentum equation. And that's just to force the eddies, not in the waves.
Daniel Okwene, Princeton. Has any sort of layering behavior like this been seen in DNS?
So that's this question in my, we've posed this, no. But DNS this is a regime that has not been probed, I think, in the
DNS. Is there hope to get into that primary regime?
I think that you can. You can do low Rossby number, strong through number, DNS, okay? And I think that that's one of the things that we're going to try to do to see if we can see this layering. Okay, it has been, like the Pouquet group has not seen it in terms of their studies, but typically it hasn't been reported.
Rodolfo, see you again. Just to answer your question, I know in double diffusive convection you can see them, but the amount of computing power you need is really insane. So, yeah.
Further questions?
Steve Tobias, University of Leeds, still. So just a comment, Keith. I mean, one of the reasons for doing astrophysics is that you can always find a star, which is in the parameter regime that you want. So there are plenty of rapidly rotating stars where the buoyancy frequency isn't exactly your regime. So when you transit from a convection zone to you're stuck with the Earth. But you know, we have plenty of stars.
I did I had one line that we're looking at convective overshoot regions in stars. Yeah, so this is an area that this could potentially a value as well. Yeah.
Joe Kluwicki, New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. This might be a little bit of an unfair question. So you have a reduced model here, and you got results. In your opinion, if you compared it with what the true solution is, what kind of things would be missing? If you compared this with what you think the true solution might look like, or the
we've filtered fast scale waves, so those will be present in a full DNS simulation. But we would like to believe that these are the limiting sets of equations. So as we take a DNS equation and we lower the Rossby number and the Froude, that this is going to land land on those equations. Now, I should add, we've done this. We've gone a lot further in the convective environment using these equations, and we've used these for rapidly rotating Rayleigh-Binard convection, and we've been doing comparisons with experimentalist John Arnault at UCLA, and you know, and DNS. So there we get one-to-one agreements in things like the heat transport and other aspects of the flow. The DNS there, use the Ekman number as a measure of the rapid rotation in those things, and they're stuck at 10 to the minus 7, okay? So to push it, and that for the experiments and the simulations is just pushing into what we call this constrained regime. And so we've been able to sort of map out the space beyond that to help them organize their experiments and also do the one-to-one verification here. So there's a paper in JFM this year that we've done this, where we do DNS and comparisons with this set of equations in that environment. So we hope that these are the limiting set, but we haven't done it for DNS verification in this particular configuration.
Any further questions? Okay, then thank Keith again.